All righty, this is a continuation of 1 Corinthians 11. Last week we covered verse 4. Today we're going to see if we can do verses 5 and 6. Okay, as I told you last time, my title for this is Practical Matters of Worship, and I'm tying that in, and I'll bring this up again. I'm tying it into Romans 14, as we discussed last year, and the issue of the conscience. I'm looking at the teaching that Paul gives here. That's why I've put this here. The application of correct protocols, or you could use behavior, to fulfill the requirements of the Torah. There is a proper behavior that would be reflected in the life of the redeemed. All right. These are just things to remind you about that I said last week, because I'm going to be discussing them again, and I didn't want you to just not... What is he referring to? This is what I'm referring to. If we're dealing with issues of moral imperatives, then these matters have already been discussed. Not by me, but by Scripture. So, and then here's another Romans 14. This letter, as I understand it, has to do with protecting the conscience of the believers. So we need to just keep that in mind. All right, let's pick up verse 5. If I need to go back and review verse 4, we can do that. But we're going to start with verse 5. Here's the text. If you remember, we discussed last meeting that unlike all of the animal creation, man's sexual partner was initially contained within Adam, was a them. Surgery changed that. So the female's been brought to man, marriage has been constituted. We already know what Yeshua had to say about in Matthew 19:6, and we covered that last week. So, with that as our foundation, we're looking at the first part of verse 5. Every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered, I have the double asterisk there, dishonoreth her kephale. You all remember we discussed kephale and left it undefined on purpose. All right. Genesis 1 and 2, we discussed that in more detail in the last meeting concerning the creation and woman and man coming together. So I'm not going to, I just want to just say it. We discussed it, and it still stands for this passage as well. All right. I'm going to break down the pieces and tell you what we don't know and what we can find out, and then we'll go back and uncover what we don't know. The first part of this is her head uncovered. That's KJV, but we're not really clear what that means yet. But verse 5b gives us a hint. I'm not going to say it gives us the answer, but it gives us a hint. It, whatever uncovered means, it's the same as if a woman had her hair completely shaved off. That's 5B. So whatever 5A means, it's the same thing as 5B. Right? That's a big help for us. So we're going to take up the look at the culture of the first century again. And we're going to discuss about women who had their head shaved. So just, we're going to start with that, and then we'll progress. I'm going to give you some quotes from that time period. The first one, punishment for being found guilty of adultery includes her hair close cropped. That would be cut short. Demonasa gave the people of Cyprus three laws. The first law A woman guilty of adultery shall have her hair cut off. If a woman was convicted of adultery, the hair of her head was cut off as a punishment. You all have access to Eldershine because I've made that available to everybody. All right. Now, when I was in the process of studying this subject, you know, I'm always doing data collection. That's what's happening. I'm doing data collection. So one day I'm in the grocery store, and I have my list, and I've got my stuff in the basket, and I'm ready to check out, and I happen to be at the end of the store, this end of the store, and what is there is this row of magazines. It must be 100 different magazines of multiple subjects. And I'm like, I think I'm going to, instead of going straight, I'm going to veer over this one little spot, and I'm going to check this out, see what's here. All right, so I'm going through there. How many people are familiar with Life magazine, Lifetime? They had a magazine there, and I like pictures. I do, photographs. So I take this magazine off, and what it is 100 of the best or most favorite photographs that Life magazine has published in the history of the magazine. They're top 100. And I'm like, ooh, this should be some good photographs. So I just stop right there in the aisle, pull this magazine out, and I'm flipping through it. And they've got a picture per page, and they've got a story. And so I'm just going through it, and I come to number 43. Okay? And I'm looking at this picture. How many people know what VE Day is? Okay? VE Day is Victory in Europe. And, of course, that took place in May of 1945. So I'm looking at this picture, and the picture strikes me as, this must be VE Day. Because you see the military men, you see the women, you see the stuff there, and I'm like, oh, this must be VE Day. That's what my brain is saying. Then I start to read the text, and I find out it's not VE Day. Okay? It was VF Day, which is the liberation of France, which was 44. Okay, and so I'm like, oh, okay, well, let me see what this has to say. Because I'm looking at this picture, and I'm going, all right, tell me something. So I start reading the text there. And as I'm reading, you know, I'm looking over this picture, and I'm going, that's odd. And what the text was saying was, in France, when the occupation took place, this French woman, married or whatever, became associated with this Nazi officer, and they had a child. They probably weren't really married, okay, but, you know, she was there, and she was, I don't know what the official term is, but anyway, she had the child of this Nazi officer. Well, then the Nazis get run out of France, and so she's coming through the street with her child in this, stroller, okay, thank you, with this stroller, and I'm really looking closely at this. I'm looking closely and I'm like, what are those people doing to that lady? Back to reading the text. What had happened was they recognized that she had performed this out of what was proper at the time. And so they didn't beat her up or steal her stuff or put her in jail. They had shaved off all her hair. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. And so then I had to go look this up, and it's like, how far does the apple fall from the tree? I mean, here we are in 1944, and in France, this woman has committed adultery, and they shaved her hair off so everybody would see it. And I was like, well, that's just another coincidence. I just happen to be studying this subject, you know. So I wanted to tell you that the apple does not fall far from the tree, it appears. All right, continuing. Based on the pieces of evidence that I saw in first century writings, a woman, while praying or prophesying in service, uncovers her head is seen as the same as one who has been found guilty of committing adultery. That's what I'm reading with Paul saying in verse 5. All right. So, let's define a female adulteress. Simple. A married woman decides to abandon her marital commitment of sexual fidelity to her husband and exercises sexual looseness outside those boundaries. I've tried to make a general definition. I think that's close. All right. So, when we are discussing this cover issue, we got a couple of choices. The first choice is hair, and the second choice is cloth. I haven't found anybody else discussing anything else. All right, so these are the two. This is what we're going to look at. All right, first, the evidence for hair. We're going to take hair. We took hair second last week for the men. This week we're going to take hair first for the women. Verse 5a. Every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her hair hanging down loosely from her head shows disrespect to her kafal. Now, this is looking at the word there, which I'm going to show you from Freiburg right here. The word that is there, which means to uncover, to let the hair on the head hang loosely, is what the Greek word means. Okay? From Freiburg, it is an adjective. It's feminine, which would be appropriate in this case. And it's singular because we're talking about an individual as a class of people. All right, continuing with Leviticus 13:45, we find this exact same word again in the Septuagint. In the leper in whom the plague is, his clothes shall be rent, and let his hair hang loosely. And he shall put a covering upon his upper lip and shall cry, unclean, unclean. But here's the same word here. And as far as we know, a leper was not wearing a head covering of cloth that had to be removed when he was declared a leper. No evidence for that that I have found. But the Greek word meaning hang loosely would fit. This is the word in Leviticus 13:45. You see the OS in blue. And then in 1 Corinthians 11:5, you see the omega, the W in blue. And the only difference here, they're both adjective, feminine, singular. One is nominative and one is dative. That's just part of Greek language. All right. So that's the only reason why you can see that there's a slight difference in spelling. This is from a Hebrew word, which defined in Halot. Remember Halot? We discussed Halot a couple meetings ago. This is the Hebrew Aramaic lexicon of the Old Testament. And their definition is, let the hair of the head go loose. And this is the Hebrew word that's located in Leviticus 13:45. BDB has let go, let loose, unbind head. The Hebrew word in Numbers, all the days of the vow of his separation, there shall be no razor come upon his head until the days be fulfilled, in which he separated himself unto Yahweh, and he shall be holy, and shall let the locks of the hair of his head grow long. That's the Hebrew word being translated there in the yellow. Once again, the Hebrew word does not mean to remove a cloth when you're going to take the Nazirite vow. In other words, men would always be wearing a cloth on their head, but when they take the Nazirite vow, they would remove the cloth. Does not fit the Hebrew definition. In Ezekiel 44:20, neither shall they shave their heads, nor suffer their locks of hair to grow long. They shall only trim the hair on their heads. Replacing this with cloth, you would have, neither shall they shave their heads, nor uncover their head by removing the cloth, they shall only trim the hair on their heads. Once again, does not fit the Hebrew or the Greek. In verse 13 of 1 Corinthians 11, Paul asks the Corinthians this question. Judge among yourselves. Now, let's think about it. We know the Corinthians have some issues. All right? I'm not going to get out a shovel They had some issues. You can read it chapter after chapter. But here, he's asking them to judge among themselves. So he must be asking them something that they can give a proper answer to. But since this was a reported activity based on 1 Corinthians chapter 1, probably verse 8 or 11, where the report comes from Chloe's household, Paul feels that they can still make a correct judgment of the situation. So, what does he say? Is it morally proper for a woman to pray unto God in a public meeting with her hair hanging down loose from her head? Once again, the Greek word is not talking about a cloth based on all of its occurrences in the scriptures. Also, let me just add, the Greek structure, it's one of those things like in English, you've heard of a rhetorical question. All right. In this particular case, we're talking about a moral issue, and the Greek emphasizes that with its structure. What does the culture at the time teach us concerning the moral message that hair hanging down loose says versus hair that is wound up? First century Corinth, what does the culture teach us? Let's take a look. An evaluation of extensive evidence from paintings, frescoes are mural-type paintings like executed on plasters of walls or ceilings. Sculptures, we know what that is. Vase paintings, there's a lot of vase paintings that have been recovered from the first century. Grave reliefs, this is where they go into the tombs and they carve stuff on the walls. In an evaluation of this information, and that's a lot of information, universally depict respectable women with their hair wound up on their head. That's what culture teaches us about the position of women's hair relative to their head. It was not hanging down. It was up. First century. Not second century. First century. That's our only concern. What was happening in the first century? Here's a reference in which they go through and have the actual pictures of all of these things throughout the century. Paul states in verse 15, if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a, what does the KJV say? Covering. But the Greek word is different. It's not the opposite. Remember when I was teaching you Greek, I was saying that you have a word, and if you want to make it the opposite, you put the letter A, alpha, in front of it, it becomes opposite. Well, this is not the opposite word. This is a completely different word, and I'm going to put up in my next bullet here, and it's the throw around. All right, let's see what it says. The basic meaning is a covering thrown around. So what does the A part say? Long hair is a glory. B, her hair is given as a covering that is thrown around. Interesting Greek word choice there. Does not fit if it's a man-made cloth. 1 Timothy, familiar with 2:9 and 1 Peter 3:3. What is the prohibition that's being taught? Once again, it's a cultural issue. All right? If he is telling them, don't do something in which hair can be seen, okay, it's not covered with a cloth, but the hair can be seen, if he's telling you to not do something, then why would he say that if the hair couldn't be seen? If there's a cloth covering the hair, why would he tell you about doing something under the cloth? Who can see under the cloth? Okay? And here's my comedic point of the day. If assembly custom required women to cover their hair with a cloth, the prohibition to not do certain things with your hair would have as little point as prohibiting certain types of similarly unseen undergarments. For example, you could prohibit me from wearing my T-shirt under my Torah observant shirt. But if you can't see under my shirt, what are you going to do? I mean, come on. Okay. It's okay, Dave. All right, you want to know why? I'll tell you the answer. What was being addressed in 1 Timothy and 1 Peter here was what is I call trending. And what was trending at that time was, as if you've got it, flaunt it. So the women in the assembly who were rich were doing, their hair was up, but they were doing it in this really beautiful gold trim and all these other stones and stuff, so that when they walked down the street, everybody knew, ooh, she's rich. Today, I think it's some kind of watch. What, Rolex? Okay, you see what I'm saying? This is a status symbol thing of the culture. Maybe you drive a Mercedes, a BMW, a Maserati. People look at that, ooh, he must have money. What is the prohibition? The prohibition is the assembly is not the place to come and to, using nonverbal language, communicate just how well off you're doing, how blessed you are. Don't do it, because that's not right. That is not a reflection of the life of the redeemed within the assembly. To brag about that without using words, that's not part of the life. So that's what he was prohibiting. But I'm looking at it from the standpoint of, why prohibit if you can't see it? All right, just bringing that out. For women to have loose hair in public was conventionally seen as shameful. I'm going to take the other side of this coin. If all the evidence shows that women of proper behavior in the first century in that Greek region under Roman control had their hair up, then, and that was the accepted normal practice, then the other side of the coin is, well, what does it tell us about women who had their hair down? Let's take a look at that. Here's the first quote. Shameful. Jewish perspective. A woman may be divorced without receiving her ketubah if she goes out with her hair unbound. Interesting. I know that that is after the fact, but I'm just telling you. Here's another interesting one that's not too far after the fact, because we know when Akiba lived and died. If a man tore another man's ear, get the picture here. If I go up to a guy and I grab a hold of his ear and I rip it, or I grab his hair and I pluck it all out, or I spit on him, or I pulled his cloak from off him, do you know what the penalty for that was? 400 zuz. That's a steep penalty. All right, now look at this. Straight out of the Mishnah, Danby version. It once happened that a man unloosed a woman's hair in the street. She came before Rabbi Akiva, and he condemned the guy, and you know how much he condemned him to pay? 400 zuz. So, ripping the hair out, spitting on the person, tearing his ear, or taking a woman's hair and letting it down in public. Equal judgment penalty. 400 zuz. All right? Implications of this amount of evidence. Women wore their hair up in public. It seems to imply that a woman was not wearing a cloth over her head. So far, I haven't seen any evidence. Shows how shameful it was regarded for a woman to let her hair down loose in this area in the first century. All right, what about the cult that you all researched that I gave you in the homework? Prominent temple in this area. Customary for women, you ready? When they went into this, they would let their hair down to prophesy. They'd let it down, okay? And then, unfortunately, they would misbehave. Okay? Many believe that in order for women to make prophetic utterances, they had to let their hair hang loose. What is 1 Corinthians 11? A woman who prays or prophesies in the public assembly with her hair hanging down loose shames See where we are here? Okay. So far, it's fitting the facts. Many a maiden driven crazy shook her hair loose. The matrons of the Dionysiac cult, whatever, the D cult, perform rites with disheveled hair. I had a lot of these quotes. The next slide is from Livy. This is a very important reference of the first century, but it was long. Men mingling with women and the freedom of darkness added, no form of crime, no sort of wrongdoing was left untried. If any of them were disinclined to endure abuse or reluctant to commit crime, they were sacrificed as victims. To consider nothing wrong was the highest form of religious devotion among them in this cult. Yeah. And this was well known. Continuing. Let's get back into the New Testament and talk to Dr. Strong. Anybody has Strong's Concordance knows this. Bacchic bands of women join in the frenzied revelry. In this manner, acting the part of the Maenades, perhaps? All right. Who were the Maenades? The Maenades were women who represented wild sexual freedom inspired by the goddess. Okay. Do you see where we're going? I'll make it more clear. Galatians 5:21. This section says, people who do these things will not inherit the kingdom. Enverings, murders, drunkenness, revelings. What does this word mean in Freiburg? It means a possession in honor of the wine god, excessive feasting or merrymaking. Strong says a nocturnal and riotous possession of half-drunken and frolicsome folk who, after supper, parade through the streets with torches and music in honor of Bacchus or some other deity. Where did the goddess come from? Bacchus. Step down. So this was going on in more than just this one little locale of Corinth. Depictions of lust-filled Maenades are common in sculptures and vase paintings, almost always with their hair let down, hanging freely. Multiple illustrations and multiple research books of that time period. The practice reinforced the symbolism, and this is the problem going back to Genesis 2, dealing with the disrespect of the kephale. Sexual looseness and abandonment of marital commitment to sexual fidelity. Think about protecting the conscience of the people in the assembly. What did I say about the two young girls that came into the assembly last time? With the boots and the high heels and the fishnet and the skirt that didn't cover anything. And the top that you could see through. And the excessive makeup. We saw them. What did we think? You don't have to say words. You don't have to issue a paper. We in this culture today understand who that person looks like. It's unspoken, but it exists. Well, here, this is what the cult stood for, was when you go in there, you are freed. Liber is the name, okay? And if you do additional research on Liber, the Statue of Liberty was modeled after Liber. I mean, it just keeps on going, folks. It's all about freedom. But there is a line that you do not cross in the freedom. And if your freedom becomes excessive, you get into trouble. Okay? So, what is the consensus across all three of the cultures? Roman, Greek, Jewish. In the first century, in that locale, loosed hair disgraces a woman. Hair put up was the accepted norm for the society. So, the evidence that I have found fits the issue of hair. So I'm going to put hair in so that you can see what it does with that verse. Okay? Check this out. Every woman that prays or prophesies with her hair hanging down loose sends the message of sexual looseness and abandonment of marital commitment to sexual fidelity, which disrespects her kephale. For it is as though she were a convicted adulterer. That's verse 5 of 1 Corinthians 11. Expand it out with what we have found so far. Not saying this is true. I'm just saying this fits the facts. That's all I'm saying. Okay? So if we go back, what did we talk about? The problem of homosexuality, male homosexuality, we discussed it last week. What was the problem? If Adam contained both, and then part was removed, brought back together, two shall be one, a definitive event has taken place in which there is no question or debate. Here are the two that make the one. Yeshua addressed that. So, if a man appears in the congregation and prays or prophesies, not just a person, but they are in a leadership role, and others are looking at them and saying, well, this person appears to me like a male homosexual, which would mean that they have rejected having a female as their proper sexual mate and are now going after another man to satisfy them, is out of order. Not that they were doing it. I'm not speaking to that they were doing it. 1 Corinthians 6, 9, and 11 says that some of them had done it. I'm not saying that these guys were doing it. I'm saying you have to remember Romans 14. It covers the whole New Testament. Whatever the behavior is, you have to protect the conscience of the assembly. It's the requirement that we have on us. And if these men are coming in and doing this and are appearing to be thus, people are going to be offended. If the two girls that I talked about last meeting come in, people are going to be offended. If in the first century women came in with their hair down, and everybody's culture says that these women were part of the cult and were expressing a separation from the sexual boundaries that were established when they were married, that is offending the people. The culture, the conscience becomes violated. You now have a problem. Paul is addressing, what did my first slide say? Proper protocol behavior during praise and worship. How are we going to behave? It includes dress as well. All right, let's continue. 6. So, if you woman will not wear your hair up, sending the message that you are a respectable woman, abiding within the boundaries of the marriage covenant, then accept the punishment associated with a convicted adulteress. However, if that's shameful, put your hair up. Appear proper. That's what this data is telling us. All right? So let's put it together. Start at number 10. In verse 13, Paul identifies a woman's long hair as being given to her to function as a throw-around covering. That's what the Greek word means, throw-around. That's the same Greek phraseology used in classical Greek of the period that discusses how a woman puts her hair on her head. Another coincidence. 9. If a woman allows her hair to hang loose, she's communicating that she is willing to abandon the boundaries of marriage established at creation and is thereby rejecting the order established within the marriage covenant. I'm not saying that that's true. I'm saying that's the impression she's giving because the culture understands that to be the case. Because that's what the decult did. 8. Social convention in Corinth required women to wear their hair done up in public. In addition, it was contrary to Hellenistic custom to pray in public with a cloth over one's head. The restriction was actually on the books of law. Can't wear cloth. It's forbidden. Thought that was interesting. 7. Loose hair fits the cultural influence and specific practice of the decult, which was popular in Corinth and explains why women in Corinth might have let their hair down. They had not been taught this was wrong. Maybe they had been in the decult, had prophesied with the hair down, had now come out, were now in the assembly. Nobody told them that they could not let their hair down in the assembly and prophesy. They did not know anything was wrong, because maybe within their heart they were fine with it and were not overstepping the boundaries of the marriage covenant. I'm saying that's possible. That's all I'm saying. So what is Paul coming along and saying? Paul's responding because Chloe's complaining. So Paul's saying, ladies, look, we have a problem. You can't do that because the culture thinks that you're sending this unspoken message. You can't do it. I'm sorry, you can't do it. All right? Six, because these hair issues were a peculiar and apparently new Corinthian assembly aberration, it's compatible with Paul's praise in 11:2. We covered that last week. The statement about a new teaching in 11:3. Thank you for following the traditions. What is a tradition? A tradition is something that helps you do what you need to do right. That's what a tradition is supposed to do. We've seen bad traditions. Of course we have. You know, I'm not debating that there are some traditions that are bad. But when a tradition is applied correctly, like this chapter, Paul's saying, hey, listen, you're following traditions that I have laid down to you to behave properly. But I need to give you a new instruction. This is what's happening. And it's sending this message. People's conscience are being offended. You can't do that in the assembly. I'm sorry. Number five, hair that was let down ties in more directly with Paul's introduction, 11:3, that lays the foundation for respect to one's source. Another of the three meanings for kaphaia, which I have not gotten into yet. That's a different teaching. Cultural evidence confirms that hair let down signaled disrespect. So let's go back to verse 3 in our minds. What is it saying? We do not want to show disrespect because there is an order of how things are laid out. And if we are demonstrating that we are not going to accept the boundary of the marriage covenant but are going to step outside of that, you can't have that behavior in the assembly. Somebody's going to get offended. Four, the only occurrence in the Septuagint of uncovered translates from that Hebrew word, which the Hebrew scholars agree means to let the hair of the head hang loosely. Does not in any lexicon that I looked at mean to remove a cloth. And that includes the leper. Three, in Paul's day, an accused adulteress had her hair let down, Numbers 5:18, and shaving it off was the penalty of a convicted adulteress. This explains why an uncovered woman is the same as a woman with her hair cut off, because they're linked. We saw it in Torah, then we see it in first century culture. Two, I have a lot of points. This only works if uncovered refers to hair let down versus removing a cloth, because we can't find a reference to a cloth. Two, 11:13 asks the Corinthians to judge among yourselves. The Corinthians within their culture would agree. You people within this culture would agree that the women that I spoke about would not be proper in this assembly, dressed that way. Okay? And number one, it agrees with Torah instructions concerning the marriage covenant. Okay, let's take this a piece at a time. Torah, we know what Torah is. Marriage covenant, we know what that is. This passage is about those who are leading, not those who are attending. Big difference. Those who are leading in prayer or prophesying are a higher level of example. Everybody remember living epistle. What are you communicating with your epistle? Are you communicating abandonment of the what God has joined together, Matthew 19? You see where we are here? In looking at the issues that relate to hair, we know that this fits the facts. The Torah speaks to us about the marriage covenant, and the Torah also covers the violation of it. Those who are leading have a higher responsibility than those who are not leading. Everybody is a living epistle, but leaders are looked towards as a higher example. Paul says, follow me as I follow Christ. As you live your epistle, you are communicating in nonverbal ways. And if people in the assembly are going to be distracted from praise and worship and offended, then we need to fix that, because that's not going to build up the body of believers. Okay? So, based on what I have found concerning hair versus cloth, it appears that the weight of evidence supports that in the first century, women who were not adulterous, did not have their head shaved, wore their hair up on their head, and in the decult, they would let it down to prophesy, and if these events were repeating themselves within the assembly, some people's consciences were being offended, and it needed to be corrected. This is what I have seen. All right? And that's the end. So, do you have any questions?